Hello and welcome to the Dorothy Project. My name's Alice and each week I spend about 25 minutes introducing you to another woman like me who's made herself at home in gay male culture. This week it's Katia Chirico. Katia programs all the incredible cabaret we see at London's Royal Vauxhall Tavern, from Drag Idol to the Chemsex Monologues. As well as her career as a producer at some of the most iconic venues in London, from Madame Jojo's to the Soho Review Bar, Katia is a trained clown and has worked in street theatre and as a stand-up comedian. As a programmer, Katia fills the calendar with new and established acts that will appeal to the Vauxhall Tavern's audience every night of the week. She identifies and works with cabaret talent to create shows that will work in this venue, which has a capacity of about 350 people and has everything from club nights to cabaret. As we'll go on to discuss, those shows encompass everything from former sugar babe Mucha Buena to the brilliant polemical performance artist and writer Scotty, or live solve-along screenings of the TV show Murder, She Wrote. You've worked in so many different areas of like the performing arts industry. And was there ever a point where you kind of thought to yourself, you know, I want to work in kind of queer spaces specifically? Like, was that a conscious thing, or was it just kind of, it's evolved out of where you found yourself?
No, it's just evolved. I mean, you know, whenever you go into entertainment, it's a whole different social ecosystem of people. And I remember when I was at school, I was going to go into business, do a business degree. That was my aim. I was going to do that. But I never really fitted into anything or anybody. I never did. I always felt really uncomfortable or... I wasn't unpopular or it just... I felt like I always had to... Like it was a language that I didn't quite get with everything. You know, I felt almost like I had autism. I couldn't read anyone. And then I suddenly had an epiphany and I went, I've got to go to drama school. That's what I've got to do. And joined a youth theatre, loved it, went to drama school. And suddenly I went, oh yeah, that's what it is. I've just been hanging out with, because there's a lack of guile and a more openness with performers. And as I went, there's also an ecosystem of that. So by the time I got to doing street theatre and comedy, I went, oh yeah, these are my people. These are my people. And then I started working here and I went, yeah, these are really my people. Yeah. Because there's an openness and a kind of honesty that is very refreshing. Sometimes it's a bit crazy. It's a bit over-honest, you know. But I get that. I understand that language, you know. Sometimes when I go back into normal life, it's like, I don't, what are you saying? Really, you're talking, but I don't know what you're saying, you know, but here it's, I get it.
The thing I had was all of the references. I feel like there was all this pop culture, all this culture that I was watching as a teenager.
That you suddenly went, oh, my God, yes, I get it.
So in terms of like collaborators, like who, has there been anyone that you've really kind of gelled with in terms of bouncing off one another, or do you tend to kind of be a bit more of a lone wolf who works with people?
Yeah, I'm a bit of both, and it depends on what it is. So when there's no one in particular that I go, oh yeah, definitely that person, because sometimes if the idea is good, you just kind of, the idea is what gives you the energy to make something go. And you kind of go, yeah, that's brilliant, we've got to do that. Like when Tim Benzie approached me and he went, I've got this great idea for doing Solve Along a Murder, and I went, yes! Why wouldn't anybody do that? You know, and then you kind of just suddenly go, that's brilliant, you know. But at the same time, you have to have some degree of objectivity, which makes you a bit of a lone wolf, because you have to look at everything from maybe a slightly different angle.
Yeah.
So you have to always... You collaborate and then separate, collaborate and separate, which is a strange thing to do. It's like a dash almost, you know.
Yeah. But. And the one thing that I was going to ask you anyway, but you mentioning that specific night has made me think, like, you know, that show has so many gay fans, like Angela Lansbury, obviously, you know, a bit of an icon. Like, is that, the one thing I'm really interested in is, like, is there like a sensibility that some women have, or for you, has it been more of a like learning process, being like gathering all of those references and being like, okay, that's going to appeal to a queer audience, whereas, you know, something else wouldn't?
Some of it's been a learning process. Like, for example, finding out that Nighty Night was a huge... I was like, really? Because I thought, it's just so straight. It's just, you know...
Do you think?
Well, yeah, when I first... I didn't even like it, you know. I mean, it was. It just didn't even appeal to me. I thought it was just so, I don't know, so without frills.
Right, you know, right. I mean, there's no glitter to it. There's
no glitter to it
at all.
I was like, oh, no, I can't. I watched a bit of it. I'm just bored now. You know, whereas Murder, She Wrote, I mean, you know, I could watch endless episodes of that rubbish. So some of it has been a surprise. Some of it wasn't. You know, like Angela Lansbury, yeah, well, why wouldn't she be, really? Because I think, I sometimes think some of those things are... they're so ridiculous in their portrayal of real life that it's absolutely laughable. And if you're a person who's kind of on the outside a bit, you kind of go, oh my God, get this. You know, and because of being, I think that's why I kind of relate so much to the sort of areas I found myself in, because I was an outsider. I didn't speak English when I came here. And so you're always a little bit outside looking in, going, oh God, everything's like a TV screen suddenly. So those shows, sometimes I'd watch them and go, that's just ridiculous. You know, it's not real life, but it's hilarious. So yeah, you kind of get an automatic understanding of that.
I guess that's kind of, that's camp, isn't it? Where you have that distance and where you have that sort of like created... Yeah, that's so... I'd never thought of that through the lens of, like, the immigrant's experience and having it...
You just see something... You see everything from the outside of yourself all the time.
So tell me about the first time that you found yourself in a queer space, in a gay bar.
God, I mean, it was years ago.
If you can remember through, like...
No, I do, because it was the Two Brewers.
Yeah,
because I grew up in South London.
Yeah.
So that was my teenage years. And then, you know, everybody got into the rave scene, and Clapham was not like it's not is now. It was just like a real dump, and all my friends were in squats. And we used to just go to the local, like, pub, which was the Frog and Forget-Me-Not, find out where the next party was, bring the sound system and go. And a lot of places then, because the licensing laws were a bit stricter, they would close, but the Two Brewers was always open a bit later, so that's where we would always go, you know. So that was, I was always there, usually on a Saturday night. I don't remember what it looked like. I sort of have vague memories of what it looked like, because by that point I was...
It's
all very hazy. But I remember it was the first time this guy came up to me and went, are you a man in drag? And I went, no. But I think this might be a good thing that you've asked me. I'm not sure. I mean, I don't think I looked like that.
I was going to say, what were you wearing at the time?
I don't remember. I think I was wearing, because it was standard, you know, rave gear. So my jeans, my trainers, and my T-shirt.
Right.
So I was like going, I either look very, very masculine at this point, so it's not such a good thing. I'm not sure. So, yeah.
So. That's so funny that was his, like, first assumption.
Yeah, that was
But I had that... I don't know if you watch RuPaul's Drag Race, but when I started watching that, like, I literally Googled, like, is Michelle Visage a drag queen?
I did too.
Right.
I did too.
And it's just, I find that so interesting that you have these people who are kind of, like, the whole look is so much of that world that initially you're not quite sure, and I love that. And so did you kind of instantly feel at home, or was it more kind of like, oh, I'm intrigued?
Yeah, no, instantly felt at home. And ironically, both my dearest best friends turned out to be LGBT, both of them.
Like down the line?
Yeah. One I kind of suspected, the other one I had no idea. So when she told me, I went, oh, right. Yeah, okay, I get it now. So... yeah, and so my best friend, who he was next door, and when he came out to me, it was he spent ages going, I've got to tell you something, it's really bad. He's going, it's really bad. And I went through everything. I went, do you need help? Have you harmed someone? Have you stolen? Have you killed someone? I said, you've got cancer. Your mum's got cancer. I knew the family. I said, your dad, what the hell is it? And I literally went through every bad scenario. I said, you've been raped. You've raped someone. What the hell is this?
Yeah.
And then he went, I'm gay. And I went, I was just angry. I went, okay, that's just so annoying. You've literally made me so anxious because I thought you'd done something terrible. And I kind of knew anyway. So I was really annoyed that he thought it was bad.
And how did he respond to that in the
moment? He was just really relieved because he came from, again, he was an immigrant.
Yeah.
And I remember when he told his family. Mm. So it was quite a big thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Has there ever been a time when you felt less welcome, kind of in a queer space? Like, because I'm interested. Go on.
I think yes and no. So it's when I first started working. Here, not here specifically, but some other places, there were some elements of why, you know, we don't want women in our space.
You know? Women in general.
Yeah. And also for my hen night, I went to GAY.
Right.
Because I used to always go to GAY. Yeah. Because I loved it. Yeah. I loved the music. I loved the crazy entertainment in the middle of it, and that particular night they had Bjorn again. Why wouldn't I go?
Amazing.
I know. So I went with all my friends and my mum. My mum came, and there was quite a lot of unpleasantness because we were there. We weren't disrespectful because I would never have been disrespectful, yeah. But there were lots of assumptions about you as a woman and why you were there and how you behave. And I thought, oh, okay, this isn't great.
I think that's really interesting because I think sometimes you kind of remember and you realise that, mm. like, it's all kind of contextual. And so in that moment, what those people in the club are seeing is a big hen do, yeah. with a load of women who they're reading as probably straight.
Yeah.
And I get why there is hostility to that, but then it's really difficult because obviously this is where you found yourself, this is where you found your career, you know, you're there for the music, you're there for your friends.
Yeah, I was there practically every weekend.
Right. And it's really difficult to navigate, I think.
Yeah, it is yeah. tricky. And I do understand because, I mean, having worked in nightlife and run shows and run independent productions, you do get these groups coming in and they are disrespectful sometimes. There's no, so I can see why they have such bad press, but they're not all like that.
Yeah.
You know, so if you set down enough rules, if you make it clear, then I think that's, you actually get a good outcome.
Yeah.
From people.
I think, yeah. that's it, isn't it? I think sometimes it's, for a lot of straight people, it's maybe the first time that they might have been in a space that wasn't really designed for straight
yeah,
people.
Yes.
And that's a bit of a learning curve.
Yeah.
Do you think in your work, like, have you felt like you've needed to kind of earn your place a bit more? Have you ever felt like there were...
Always as a woman. Always.
I mean, that's a much bigger question, yeah. isn't it?
Always, it doesn't matter.
Always.
And how do you think you've had to, like, demonstrate that? Have there been moments where you've been like, okay, I've had a breakthrough with this person, or, you know, in this venue, or...
Yeah, I think it's people just not seeing what you do. And it's less in the LGBT environment, actually. But, for example, when I was programming Magic Night, which was a 10-year show, so, you know, it was a sellout, it was always busy. I fused all these different mediums, and it was completely innovative what I did. And about 7 years down the line, somebody came in at the South Bank and did a similar type of thing. And then I was talking to a ticket seller at the time, it was an app, and they went, yeah, it's amazing what Alex has done. No one's ever done this before. And I just went, I'm in the news, you know, it's a critic's time out all the time. Have you not seen this? But if you're a woman, it just, you just don't, it's like you don't get seen. And people would come to the night, and I would sometimes have my husband there working at the door, and they assumed I was working for him.
No.
All the time.
It's that unconscious bias, yeah. Isn't it? People don't even realise they're doing it.
It's just an automatic assumption.
Yeah.
Automatic.
And then I find that really, and I think this is something with so many subcultures, you know, if something breaks through and becomes mainstream and gets kind of legitimised,
yeah.
People always see that as like, that's where the innovation is. And actually, it's probably piggybacking
on like many things that came before it. Yeah, and you can always, you know, one of the things that people say to me that they can't, with an idea, and they go, "It's brilliant, never been done before." And I go, "Actually,
it definitely has."
Yeah, you can sort of do it, and I liken it to Japanese theatre, because if you do Japanese kabuki, or no, you're trained in a particular way of doing that. So every show is exactly the same. You do every character in exactly the same way, exactly the same eye, hand movements. The costumes the same. So they say it's not about the actor. You don't interpret. You do that in that way, because they're. Position is, everybody is different already, but that is designed, that piece of theatre is designed to do that, to portray this story. It's not about your interpretation. And I think invariably all the characters are slightly different anyway, they're played slightly different because different people, and I think that's what happens anyway. People think they've got a new idea, but it's always going to be new because you're doing it in your own way, in
yes.
your own style.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. Do you think a straight person or straight people can make art and culture that is queer?
I don't know, because I think they have inadvertently, when they've made things like, you know, Murder, She Wrote.
Right.
I mean, I'm assuming it was straight people, you know, a straight producer, but maybe it wasn't. I don't know. But inadvertently, yes. On purpose, I think it might be tricky, because it's much of the output we see that goes on the stage, not so much maybe the club nights, particularly the shows, are derived from an experience, and it becomes then a language. And sometimes those languages are slightly coded because people will understand what that is, you know, and there are experiences that we don't always have, you know. But then that's not to say a straight person couldn't come along and produce.
And collaborate.
On something, or even write something
from
that perspective. People do write about things that are nothing to do with them, or create work that's nothing to do with them.
That's interesting, because I think, yeah, there's that surface level, isn't there, of kind of speaking the language.
Yeah.
But that kind of lived experience. I think one thing that I'm finding really interesting at the moment is the kind of the growth and the conversation around female drag queens. So not drag kings, but kind of performing that femininity.
Yeah.
And I had a drag makeover, have done a couple of times, and the thing that I found really interesting, because I guess my position is that, yes, absolutely, you can have female drag queens, gender is a performance, drag is a performance of gender, you can ask all sorts of interesting questions, but the thing I noticed, and I wonder if it's especially because I'm quite short, is I was, I guess, missing the presence, and also there are boundaries that you're just not crossing, I think, as a female drag queen. You can do certain things, but it's different, I think. And I'd love to know what you think.
I think drag is it's assuming an outer layer, now a character. And with Drag Idol in particular, we've seen a huge influx of drag queens, not just drag kings, but drag queens that are female. And they do it very, very well, because it's a stage act, essentially. And they've got something to say. Whether, you know, so you have somebody like Ava Wonder, who comes on and she'll do it as in drag, and she'll have quite an important point to make, and it comes across quite forcefully and can be quite, you know, you'll be taken aback by it. So I would say some of her work is subversive, just like, you know, original drag queens who were men, dressed roughly as girls. They were doing something subversive because they were challenging certain things about our society. So no, I think it can be done. I think it can be challenged. I think there's still a lot to say, you know, and it's just depends on the on where they, which viewpoint they take from doing their drag. But I still see it as viable and important drag, whether it's men or women. I know that there is some argument over this, less so now.
Yes, it feels less like so. In the last kind of year or so, it's definitely shifted, which is really great, because I noticed a fair amount, and it's always interesting when you see an instinctive reaction that is quite defensive and quite aggressive, and I was like, oh, this is interesting, there's a button being pushed here.
I
feel like it's become a lot more mainstream and a lot more accepted.
Absolutely. And I think it's because you can't exclude art. You can't say this is not your art. You can't say that to somebody. You can't say you can't do this because you don't have the right genetic, you know, the right body equipment. You can't, because if you did that in any other part of working life, that would be wrong. That would be illegal. You can't say that. You can't say you can't be a policeman. You're a woman. You know, you can't. So it's just fair and square. We should all have access to art and be able to do art. It doesn't matter what your gender is.
The other thing I wanted to ask you was, to nominate another Dorothy who you think I should speak to.
Oh, God. Well, there's quite a few.
You can say more than one. I'd love to
hear
more.
I think Dawn, I still call her Dawn Wright Nasty, but that is no longer...
That's an amazing name.
I know, but that is no longer her actual...
Right. You know,
her actual name. But Dawn, who does the lip syncers, that Dawn, you know, Dawn.
Yeah.
So, yeah, she's great. And I would say Rose Thorne from the Double R Club. She's a great person.
And what makes them interesting, do you think?
Just their viewpoints and their take on what they do. So, Dawn is just a really interesting and intelligent person who's also exceptionally funny.
So the funny thing is, I actually don't agree anymore with what I said about female drag queens back then. Talking to people like Katya and the drag queen Fanny Minka for this podcast over the last few months has really opened my mind to what drag can be and what women can do in drag, which is everything. I'd love to know what you think of that or anything else we talked about. So tweet me at Dorothy_podcast or leave a review on Apple Podcasts. I'd love to know what you think.